Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpuga. And this evening we'll talk about accountability for former African leaders. And tonight we have my colleague, Paul Ondiho of VOA TV to Africa. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Douglas.
You're welcome. Later on, we'll be joined by another colleague, Henok Fente of VOA's Amharic Service. But right now we're joined by Suleiman Mgula, regular panelist and friend of the show. He's joining us by phone, as usual, from Durban, South Africa. And he's an independent political analyst based there. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the panelists.
Thank you very much. Thank you. How are you?
Fine. How is Washington?
Washington is fine, thank you. Now, they said this week a court in Egypt sentenced former President Hosni Mubarak to 3 years in prison after finding him guilty of embezzling public funds. His two sons, Ala and Gamal, were also convicted and given four-year terms. The three also were fined $3 million and ordered to pay the $17 million they were accused of stealing. Mubarak also is on trial for abuse of power and conspiring in the killing of protesters during the 2011 uprising that forced him to resign. Let me start in Durban. Lately there's been some little bit of accountability for former leaders. We're seeing now Mubarak here being sentenced. The Tunisian president had to pay by taking off very fast to Saudi Arabia. Colonel Muammar Gaddafi paid by his life and because he didn't have time to be arrested or be tried. Charles Taylor is cooling his heels in a jail in Europe. Although some people, the lucky ones like Mengistu, are sort of in hiding in Zimbabwe. Is this trend, will it, first of all, your general comment on this accountability?
Accountability, Douglas, this you've picked a very sensitive topic. Very sensitive in the sense that as we talk, I think we have got not rivers, but lakes of tears across the continent. The destruction which many of the former leaders and sitting leaders have committed to the peoples of Africa is quite immense. You are talking, to put it in perspective, within these few years from the late 90s, you are talking of close to 6 million people dead in DRC. You are talking of 1 million people dead in northern Uganda from 1986 since Museveni took over. You are talking of 800,000 people killed in the rural area of in the central Uganda during the time Mr. Museveni, who is the sitting president in Uganda, was fighting his guerrilla war between 1980 and 1985. You are talking of 800,000 dead in Rwanda. You are talking of 40,000 dead by Saint Habre in Chad. You are talking of 2 million under the hands of Haile, of Mengistu. You are talking of several thousands dead in Ivory Coast during the conflict when Gbagbo was refusing to vacate power. You are talking of several thousands tortured and some dead during the election periods in Zimbabwe, even in the Operation Mramba China in Zimbabwe. So you are talking of thousands of, not one person, but you are talking of thousands of innocent, unarmed civilians dead. And you are talking of those dead both by commission and by omission. So this is the extent at which we are. So even the little accountability which is coming, we are yet to see whether it is actually sufficient compared to the crimes committed against the African people.
Paul, you agree the accountability is coming a little bit too late and a little bit too little?
I think what I first of all want to agree with what Suleiman is saying. I think Africans have longed for this kind of accountability. It's about time that these leaders realize that when they commit crimes, there are consequences. The reason they have been able to do so much and get away with it, it's because there is no form of accountability. There are no consequences at the end of the day. So that gives them a blanket check to do what they feel like they should do, or to do what the crimes that they have committed. So the fact that there is a semblance of accountability, to me, it's a good thing that could be happening. And I'm sure every African is watching what's happening, especially in Egypt. They are watching over their colleagues in the other African countries. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to have its own legs. Eventually, it will start running. Because once Africans realize that they can hold these leaders accountable, I think it's going to change the way people look at these leaders and how these leaders look at themselves. Because they have been doing it knowing that they have all the power. Nobody can hold them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that there is this little significant move towards accountability, I think it's going to change how things are looked at on the continent.
Suleiman, what's your take on the issue of, because some people have said, some analysts, we see trials in Egypt, right, and Gaddafi got killed almost on the battlefield. But the other accountability so far, that is Taylor and Gbagbo, it had to take international involvement. These guys were actually tried in Europe, are being tried in Europe. So who should hold these leaders to account? International community or the citizens whom maybe they wrong?
The problem we have on the continent is that for a long time, we as African, we have not been in charge of our destiny. Our destiny has been shared. You'll find that, for example, when you look at the past leaders who have committed atrocities, some of them have been helped by the international community. There were attempts to overthrow, though the wrong person was doing it. Libya tried to overthrow Habre in 1983, around 1983, though it was Libya which was trying, but you'll find that it was France and the United States of America that helped Habre to ward off the Libyan attack. So you will find that many of these dictators have been helped on one hand by the developed countries. They nurture them, they give them arms, they give them financial support. Directly or indirectly, they commit these atrocities because we as Africans, both at national level and at regional level and at continental level, we lack the structures to protect our people. We have created institutions, but the institutions are so weak they cannot help us. Otherwise, we are supposed to start from the local structures to the regional structures and the continental structures. If you compare to other regions, for example, when you compare in Malaysia recently, when the plane disappeared, it was the national pressure within the nation, the civil society, the people within. In South Korea, when they had the accident, it's again the national pressure, also adding on the international pressure. The international pressure reacts on the national pressure. So what has happened is that we have been so weak ourselves as Africans, regardless of the atrocities committed by our leaders, many of the African people have failed to have the courage to stand up against these regimes.
Yeah, but before I proceed, Paul, you see he mentioned institutions there, but in many African countries, okay, there are no viable, strong, firm institutions to hold this, if say most leaders actually in short are above the law, they are the law unto themselves.
I think you make a very good case there. I think for me, I'll even go further and blame the elite, the African elite, the civil society, not only the leaders, because it takes a combination of all those people to have institutions in place. I think what has happened is that there is a breakdown of of order. There is a breakdown of this institutional framework that we are talking about. When you look at, for instance, let's say, from a village level, people don't know how much power they have. They don't know that these leaders, I remember back in the day when I was doing a political science class, they used to talk about a government of the people, by the people, for the people.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, it seems that there are governments by some people, for some people, rather than, you know. So when you look at this, a breakdown of social order, and this in a way plays into these leaders doing what they can, because they know that they are more powerful than the people. If people realize that how much power they have, I don't think these leaders can do what they do, because they know at the end of the day, power belongs to the people. But in this particular case, power belongs to the leaders. And I think that's where, at the beginning of, I talked about there is an institutional breakdown right from the village level. That's where it goes back. These citizens don't know their rights. The civil society hasn't helped much. Mm. The elite are part of, you know, are part of the, they just sit back and embrace.
They enjoy. They are part of the beneficiary of that cadre.
Absolutely.
I strongly agree with Jackson. And we need, I think, to emphasize, Douglas, the contribution of the elites to the horrible state in which our continent finds itself in. Let me give one scenario. In South Africa, it is very different. The elites have refused to sell in to any cheap politics. For example, we have got a public protector, an advocate. He's given an assignment as a public protector. They are called in East Africa, we call them what? What do you call the
IGG?
In the rest of the continent?
Inspector General of Government?
Public protector. Not Inspector General of Government.
Government prosecutor.
Mm-hmm. So what he did, he was given an assignment by the public. The public complains and he investigates. He investigates and he finds that the president benefited corruptly somewhere into some government activities or government renovations which were carried on in his home. The government tries to twist his hand, to twist her hand. The lady and her team have stood ground. Number two, we have had cases that have gone to court. Government against, let's say, individuals. Government against some institutions. The lawyers will never bend the law in favor of the government. No matter whether one is ANC before he's a judge, but they have not bent the laws. When you look at other African countries, it is our elites who frame the oppressive laws. For example, in Uganda, I've just passed the public order bill. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine it is being prepared by land lawyers from the country itself to oppress its own people, but it is being done by the citizens themselves who are educated. It goes to parliament, you find the very educated people who cannot read between the line and see, here we are oppressing people. You take people to court and you detain them without trial, and you cannot reprimand government for it. You find the police has shot people direct with live ammunition, but you cannot apprehend the police. You cannot lock the police because you fear they are part of government. So the way Jackson has said, our elites are to be blamed.
Yes, it's Paul Suleimani. We have Paul in the studio. You want to contribute?
I was going to say that looking at why we have these problems. I would give an example of a simple traffic rule. In some countries, people run when it's a green light. You see cars driving through a green light. When it's red, they still run through. That tells you that the simple structures of any system are not there, because if you can't observe the simplest thing, let's say a traffic light, how do you expect to hold your leaders accountable?
In other words, it's a culture.
It's not even a culture. It's something that goes beyond a culture, because this is not African, really. Mm. African, growing up, you're told, you know, to obey your leaders, to do all sorts of things.
Mm.
But when you look at that kind of thing, it's not even part of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that has roots in, it starts from the leadership itself,
mm-hmm.
because the leadership doesn't feel that it owes it to the people. And the people don't feel like they have to hold this leadership accountable. So when you look at it from that perspective, you realize that it is going to take a totally different mindset to change some of these mm-hmm. rules that we hold these leaders accountable. Because when you look in a system where, let's say, leaders are held accountable, things work.
Okay, gentlemen, let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of the accountability for former African leaders. Just don't go away.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing accountability for former African leaders. Our panelists are my colleague, Paul Undiho of VOA TV to Africa, and Suleiman Mgula, a South African-based independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Before we broke off there, both of you alluded to this lack of institutions. But then some people have pointed out that it would be unfair or too much to expect some of these leaders who came to power by breaking the law itself to follow the law. Look at people like Gaddafi, Mubarak, Taylor, Mengistu, and others who are still in power. If they came in power through the barrel of the gun by breaking the law to acquire power, how then would one expect them to abide by the law?
Hmm.
Yeah, Suleiman, you want to take it? Go ahead.
Actually, that is one of the dilemma we are finding ourselves on the continent, because many of the people we call leaders are not our leaders. They elected themselves. They got their AK-47, they got their guns, and found their way in power. So what we need to do in Africa is find a way to get our power back. What is lacking is the way we have said, the elites, instead of mobilizing the masses, they have decided to side with the dictators. So what the people need is to wake up. All we need a revolutionary to come up, the way it was done in Ghana. You get 5 leaders, you put them, you take a leader and his group, you put them on the firing squad, the way it was done in Ghana, or the way it was done to Gaddafi, or the way it was done to Samuel Doe, or the way it is done by us here in South Africa. For us in South Africa, if you are against the people will touch you. They will come and burn your house. They will come and find you. They will come and stone you. They will come and toy. They will make life difficult for you. That is what is lacking in Africa. In Africa, people need to know, as Paul said, people need to know that they have got the power. If a police commissioner orders shooting 10 people, why should he and his family continue to stay where they stay untouched? why shouldn't the people go and attack him, go and attack his house, go and attack his mother's house, go and attack his brother's house, go and attack his sister's house, go and attack his children in school, so that they know that once I kill, even my people will be killed. So unless the people use their power to turn things around, then we are in problem. Even taking them to the International Court of Justice won't help, because we have already lost many and we are continuing to lose many, not only through death by guns and torture, but we have got those who are dying because of the corruption, the negligence. There are no medicines in hospitals. There are no medicine, but someone is flying his daughters to Germany to have the daughter deliver. There are no medicine, but Bia is spending a month in France on holiday in expensive hotels. Nguema is having his son driving the latest of the limousines in France and owning mansions in France. So unless we, the people on the ground in Africa, they will take action on those who support these dictators and all those ones surrounding them, then you won't have a movement.
But Paul, I think before I proceed, and I'll let you proceed with your point, but keep in mind that some of these strongmen have the coercive tools of coercion. They have the police, they have the military, and they don't take kindly to being challenged.
I think you're right about that. I think two wrongs don't make it right. That being said, I think despite all that, I think it's possible that changes can happen on the ground. One, I think that young people really need to rise up and say we've had enough. Because Africa now has, 75% of its young population are under 35 and below. Mm. So these, and when you look at it, the intellectual balance of power is shifting in our favor. You have more educated young people. You have people who have gone to different schools, who have graduate degrees, PhDs, but they are sitting back and not saying anything. So if these people are to rise up, because politics at the end of the day is about numbers, if these people are to rise up and speak up, I bet you our leaders will not take us for granted. Mm. I think the biggest problem that we are having is that these leaders know that we have the masses, we have the numbers, but we don't know how to use those numbers. And even the young educated people are complacent in this. They have not really taken it to, they have not used their level of consciousness to rise up and say, we've had enough.
I see. And now we're running out of time, but let's wind up on this last note. There are people who have pointed out that the fact that some of these leaders commit atrocities and they break the law, that has prompted them to violate their constitutions and to hang on to power, knowing that if should they relinquish power, then they'll be held to account. Do you agree?
To some extent, yes. But now, more than ever before, they're realizing that, yes, there are consequences at the end of the day. That's why they don't want to leave power, because they know the moment they leave power, they will be held accountable. So those are the consequences. If you did something and you know you can get away with it, you'll not be worried about it. Mm. But if you know that somebody is going to come after you and hold you accountable, guess what? You think twice before you do it.
Suleiman?
Any leader who stays beyond the two terms basically becomes a criminal because he unleashes the coercive machinery into play, because change is natural. Just as there is day and night, just as there is winter and summer, every nation needs a change. You cannot lead it forever. People are always fighting for change. If you don't give them, they will try to find a way. So what do the leaders do? They put their coercive machinery into it. They do suppression. They do intimidation. They do torture, psychological and physical, and so on. So anybody who has stayed more than 10 years is basically a criminal, and he has got crimes against humanity for that particular country. So the excuse will not be to leave them forever. We have to have an alternative as Africans. Paul has put it very well. The challenge is on the youths, who are the majority, who are strong, whose future is being sabotaged. They are the ones who are on the boats to Europe. They are the ones who are suffering in the colds in Europe. It is upon them to stand and fight for their future. It is cheaper to fight for your destiny and get better life in your own country, the way we are in South Africa, than running away to go to Europe and stay in the cold. I wish the youth should know that it will be better for them to fight and overthrow the dictators and determine their destiny.
Will the fear of the coldness in Europe force them to stand up and demand for their rights?
Well, a little bit of that, but I think more importantly, I think it's about time that the youth really realize that they have the potential to change the dynamics of what is happening on the continent. I think they can literally, you saw what happened in Tunisia, you saw what happened in Egypt, in Libya. Yeah, it was all because of these youthful groups of people that started this revolution. And I think it can be replicated across the entire continent. So for me, personally, I think that the young people have a role to play in changing the political spectrum of what's happening on the continent.
Finally, Suleiman, do you see a number of current sitting presidents facing accountability soon or at some point in the future?
Douglas, I can't see how some of these leaders are going to survive accountability. I mean, 6 million people dead in DRC. Someone has to account for it. 1 million people dead in Uganda. Someone has to account for it.
South Sudan.
Habre is going to account for it. Even Mengistu has to account. So there is no way they can be left. They are only postponing the inevitable. But it has to come.
But are they learning? They're not learning.
I think there are some who have learned. There are people who have learned from past experiences, especially now that we have the International Criminal Court. Most leaders are actually conscious about what they do. They think about it before they commit certain crimes. However, there are some leaders who have not really learned from what other leaders have done, and they continue to commit these atrocities. But that said, I think the international community is watching. Everybody is watching. Whoever commits crimes, he has to be held accountable. Because at the end of the day, the leaders take personal responsibility for the atrocities that are committed during their term. So it doesn't matter whether you kill one person, 100 people, if somebody holds somebody is going to hold you accountable at the end of the day. I mean, look at what's going on in South Sudan. They're saying that whoever is involved, whether it's President Salva Kiir or Riek Machar, they have to take personal responsibility for the crimes that have been committed by their troops.
Although some have gone away with that, those crimes, some leaders.
Yes, but at the end of the day, there is somebody watching, and it's no longer the question of, oh, I can do this and get away with it. Somebody is watching over you, and people have to be very careful.
I see. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague here, Paul Ondiho of VOA TV to Africa. Paul, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you, Suleiman Mgula, South African-based political analyst. Suleiman, as usual, thanks a lot for being on the show.
It is always a pleasure. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
You're welcome. Our producer, as usual, has been Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer tonight, actually lately, is Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still listen to the whole thing. Just go to the web and click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to that program again. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next week, I'm your host Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
Bakarlene.